Hey everyone, it's Jacob here. Welcome back to another episode of the Law of Code podcast. This is the show covering the legal side of crypto, NFTs, DAOs, and any other blockchain-related innovation.
Anything mentioned in this episode by Jacob Robinson or his guests is not legal advice or investment advice. All opinions are Jacob's and his guests alone. Nothing discussed today should be relied upon for legal or investment decisions. This show is solely for information and entertainment purposes only. Jacob and his guests are not your lawyers, nor are they investment advisors. Please work directly with a lawyer or investment professional.
2 years ago, recognizing that the SEC wanted but lacked statutory power to regulate crypto exchanges, Chair Gary Gensler asked Congress for a legislative mandate. None came. Now, without any intervening legislative act, the commission accuses Coinbase, the largest U.S. crypto exchange, of having defied the federal securities laws in failing to register as a securities exchange, broker, and clearing agency since 2019. No matter that the SEC allowed Coinbase to go public in 2021 with the same business it operates now. No matter that Congress has for years been actively considering and just last week advancing legislation to grant and allocate, among other regulatory agencies, the very authority the SEC now claims for itself. The SEC wanted to get the jump. That was the first paragraph of the preliminary statement that Coinbase filed together with their external counsel on August 4th, 2023, for the dismissal of the charges that the SEC brought against them. This episode will be a full breakdown of that motion with a few comments intermixed throughout. But if you are interested in the motion and you haven't had the chance to read it, I think this will be a helpful way for you to get up to speed on what everyone in the crypto community has been talking about. And rightly so, as this is a very strong motion and a persuasively written one that I wanted to highlight on this podcast. So now we'll get back into the remainder of the preliminary statement before going through the arguments in the motion. In making that jump, the SEC has violated due process, abused its discretion, and abandoned its own earlier interpretations of the securities laws. But there is a more fundamental problem with this case, one the chair recognized 2 years ago, and that entitles Coinbase to judgment on the pleadings now. The subject matter falls outside the agency's delegated authority. The SEC may pursue this enforcement action only if relevant transactions in the digital assets and services identified in the complaint are investment contracts and therefore securities under the Securities Act of 1933 and the Securities Exchange Act of 1934. Because as a matter of law, none of them are, the claims must be dismissed. An indispensable feature of the investment contract, as defined by the Supreme Court in Howey and by the state securities law jurisprudence that grounded Howey, is that it at least purport to grant the purchaser a contractual right to the profits, income, or assets of a business enterprise. The SEC does not and cannot allege that transactions in the 12 tokens identified in the complaint that take place on Coinbase's secondary market spot exchange or on other secondary market exchanges through Coinbase Prime carry such rights. They are asset sales with the obligations of buyer and seller discharged at the point of sale. Were there any doubt on this score, the major questions doctrine would require dismissal in deference to Congress's prerogative to decide how to establish and allocate authority over the digital asset arena. Nor does Coinbase operate as a broker of investment contracts by making wallet software available to users. The token that the SEC says customers can self-custody using wallet, Nexo, is not alleged to carry any more rights to a share in any enterprise than the other 12 tokens identified. Even if it were otherwise, the complaint pleads nothing to suggest that Coinbase functions as a broker under the securities laws by making available to users free software, allowing them to store and access their own digital assets on their own computers or devices. Finally, the SEC's claims targeting Coinbase's staking program fail as a matter of law because, one, the facts pleaded and incorporated by reference establish that staking service customers make no investment of money by staking through Coinbase's software, and two, staking customers receive ministerial as opposed to managerial services from Coinbase. So that was the preliminary statement by Coinbase in this motion. Very strong opening. They make four main arguments. The first is that the complaint does not plead securities transactions. Second, the major question doctrine compels rejection of the SEC's construction of investment contract. Three, Coinbase is entitled to judgment on the claim that it acts as an unregistered broker through wallet. And four, Coinbase is entitled to judgment on the claim that its staking services constitute unregistered securities. Now, this episode will almost be word for word of the Coinbase motion. We'll skip a good portion of the background because it talks about the different SEC charges being brought, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with. But I did want to include this aspect of background as it does a great job of summarizing the services that have been targeted by the SEC in their charges. All four services targeted here, Coinbase's spot exchange, Prime, wallet, and staking, have been central features of Coinbase since well before April 2021, when the SEC declared the company's registration statement effective after an intensive six-month review. By that declaration, the SEC necessarily found that Coinbase's public listing served the public interest and the protection of investors, and that adequate information about Coinbase and its offering was available to the public. The next month, Chair Gensler confirmed what was implicit in declaring effective an S-1 for an unregistered exchange, testifying that, quote, there is not a market regulator around these crypto exchanges, unquote, and, quote, only Congress, unquote, could confer authority to regulate crypto exchanges. What a great example of a persuasive argument here. There's been so much talk around these, the S-1 that was filed and the fact that the SEC declared Coinbase's registration statement effective, whether or not that served to validate the business model that Coinbase have. But when you pair that with that quote from Gensler, and I'll repeat it, it makes the argument much stronger that there was some form of sign-off by the SEC. The next month, Chair Gensler confirmed what was implicit in declaring effective an S-1 for an unregistered exchange, testifying that there is not a market regulator around these crypto exchanges, unquote, and, quote, only Congress, unquote, could confer authority to regulate crypto exchanges. Congress has consistently recognized that regulatory authority over digital assets remains unassigned. In recent years, it has considered more than 20 legislative proposals for regulation of digital assets. None of these proposals reflect the view that the SEC has the authority it claims through this action. Just last week, several such bills clarifying the allocation of agency regulatory authority over digital assets advanced from committees to the House floor to await a vote. And some of these bills are the Financial Innovation and Technology for the 21st Century Act, Clarity for Payment Stablecoins Act, as well as, and then they reference an article that touches on those bills. Until recently, the SEC, too, hewed to the comparatively modest position regarding its own authority reflected in Chair Gensler's May 2021 congressional testimony. From 2018 to 2017, so that's 9 years, the agency made no attempt to regulate crypto, though it announced in 2017 that certain digital assets sold in initial coin offerings, so the ICOs, might be securities under Howey. The SEC's Director of Corporation Finance later acknowledged that a token all by itself is not a security. And they have a footnote there discussing that in the absence of formal SEC guidance, Coinbase sought to integrate this and other statements by SEC personnel personnel into its asset listing process. Deepening the unfairness of its regulation by enforcement approach, the SEC seeks to throw these efforts back in Coinbase's face. And that itself is a great way to use these facts, right? The fact that the SEC petitioned for rulemaking, no rulemaking was given, so they tried their best to interpret what had come from the SEC. This action completes the SEC's entire change of position. So remember, first the S1 was validated, right? Of course, 2008 to 2017, there was no attempt to regulate crypto. There's been statements that a token all by itself is not a security. But then here they say, this action completes the SEC's entire change of position. By December 2022, Chair Gensler was telling a reporter the SEC already had, quote, enough authority, unquote, in existing securities laws to fully regulate digital asset platforms. On March 22, 2023, the commission sent Coinbase a Wells notice. On June 6th, days after the introduction of new legislation to regulate digital assets, and the very same morning, Congress began hearing testimony on the bill, including from Coinbase's chief legal officer, the SEC filed this action. Now we'll move to the argument. So that was some background as well as the opening statement, and the argument is where they make their case. Coinbase moves to dismiss under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 12C. To survive a 12C motion, the complaint must contain sufficient factual matter accepted as true to state a claim to relief that is plausible on its face. The court considers the complaint, the answer, any written documents attached to them, and any matter of which the court can take judicial notice for the factual background of the case. If the allegations of a pleading are contradicted by documents made a part thereof, the document controls and the court need not accept as true the allegations of the pleading. Applications of these standards requires dismissal. Though Coinbase has raised many other defenses provable upon summary judgment or trial, the issues raised by this motion, which rests solely on deficiencies in the complaint, are independently dispositive of the entire case. And so with this motion, the goal here is to highlight the deficiencies within the SEC's case to have the court dismiss the case. And the core argument is simple. They do not offer investment contracts, as that term has been construed by decades of Supreme Court and other binding precedent. By ignoring that precedent, the SEC has violated due process, abused its discretion, and abandoned its own earlier interpretation of securities laws. Assertions by Coinbase and the defenses that they raise in order to have this case dismissed. First, the complaint does not plead securities transactions. Indispensable to the SEC Exchange Act claims is the contention that trades over Coinbase and through Prime of the 12 tokens identified in the complaint are exchanges of investment contracts, a species of instrument commonly known as a security as identified in the Act. The Supreme Court, drawing from state decisions interpreting blue sky statutes that predated the federal securities laws, has defined an investment contract as a contract or a transaction or scheme of connected contractual undertakings in which a person invests in an enterprise in exchange for a promise to deliver the profits or income of a business at a future date. An investment contract for purposes of the Securities Acts, for the purposes of the Securities Act, means a contract, transaction, or scheme whereby a person invests his money in a common enterprise and is led to expect profits solely from the efforts of the promoter or a third party, it being immaterial whether the shares of the enterprise are evidenced by formal certificates or by nominal interests in the physical assets employed in the enterprise. And that's from Howey itself. Decades of precedent confirm that for an investment to constitute an investment contract, the buyer must have a contractually grounded expectation of delivery of future value. The investment, moreover, must be directed in the business itself rather than a purchase of the business's products or output. I'm going to read that one again. The investment, moreover, must be directed in the business itself rather than a purchase of the business's products or output. So for example, one can invest in a baseball or other trading card company through an instrument that imposes obligations on the company, and that will be a security. Or one can buy baseball cards on the open market, hoping they appreciate in value, and one will have bought a commodity. So you can invest directly in a trading card company, or you can buy the baseball cards themselves. One can buy baseball cards, just to repeat this, on the open market, hoping they appreciate in value, and one will have bought a commodity. That remains true even if the company makes representations about plans to create a premier card trading platform to drive up the value of the cards it sells. Those representations can't turn baseball cards into security. Baseball cards are not shares in the baseball card enterprise, and they cite Howey there. Obviously not for the baseball cards, but for the shares in the enterprise. This principle applies equally here. The transactions over Coinbase's platform and Prime are not, and do not involve, contractual undertakings to deliver future value reflecting the income, profits, or assets of a business. They are commodity sales with the obligations on both sides discharged entirely the moment the token is delivered in exchange for payment. The SEC's complaint does not allege otherwise. Because it does not and cannot plead the required elements of an investment contract, the SEC's Exchange Act claims should be dismissed. And then they get into the sub-arguments within the broader "there are no investment contracts on the platform." So for part A, because the complaint alleges no contractual undertaking beyond the point of sale, no investment contract is pleaded. So I'll repeat that. Because the complaint alleges no contractual undertaking beyond the point of sale, no investment contract is pleaded. There's no contract beyond that initial sale. The Supreme Court has explained that when Congress identified an investment contract as a security subject to federal regulation, it was, quote, using a term the meaning of which had been crystallized by prior judicial interpretation, unquote, applying states' blue sky laws. And that's a quote from Howey. The SEC's own briefing in Howey agreed that Congress was adopting that construction of the term, which was uniformly followed by the state courts. That construction invariably referred to a contractual undertaking to deliver value at a later date. And they refer to many, many other cases when discussing that the construction invariably referred to a contractual undertaking to deliver value at a later date. And they cite the Terraform Labs case from July 31st, recognizing that Howey involved a contract that promised a future return based on an initial investment. That is an investment contract. Now, even before Howey, the Supreme Court acknowledged that an instrument must at least appear to the investor to confer contractual rights to the delivery of future value before it can be called an investment contract. The court, in the case of CM Joiner Leasing Corp., while reserving on the question of an oil lease contract's enforceability under state law, concluded that the arrangement was an investment contract involving a promise to deliver future value because acceptance of the offer quoted made a contract in which payments were timed and contingent upon completion of the well. Until recently, the SEC too acknowledged that an irreducible feature of the investment contract is that it confer, or at least appear to confer, contractual rights to delivery of future value. In its Howey brief, the SEC wrote that an investment contract includes any contractual arrangement for the investment of money in an enterprise with the expectation of deriving profit through the efforts of the promoters. Noting that the asset sale was made with the accompanying contractual arrangements upon which the investor relies for his expectation of profits. And really, this does such a great job of just highlighting how important the contractual arrangement itself is, and they put it in the words of the SEC. the SEC wrote in their Howey brief that an investment contract includes any contractual arrangement for the investment of money in an enterprise with the expectation of deriving profit through the efforts of the promoters. The SEC further observed that an investment contract may be modified or terminated and noted that the contractual rights of investors in Howey were not merely interests in the land, but enforceable written contracts for development, cultivation, and marketing of produce by the promoters. 3 decades later, the SEC defended its conception of a pension fund interest as an investment contract by arguing that it granted a contingent interest in future profits that was legally recognizable. 3 more decades later, in arguing that a bond-like instrument pegged to payphones was an investment contract, the SEC emphasized that, quote, contract, unquote, carries independent meaning. The second word in the quoted term contract means, quote, an agreement between two or more persons to do or forbear something, unquote. And that is from the Edwards case in 2003. Post-Howey case law has likewise consistently recognized that an investment contract involves a contractual undertaking to deliver future value. For example, the Second Circuit in Revac v. SEC Realty Corp. held that a condo sale unaccompanied by any collateral agreement supporting a future expectation of rental income was not an investment contract. And that's a case from 1944. Writing for the First Circuit in Rodriguez v. Banco Central Corp., Judge Bowden held that a contract for land in a new development that turned out to be a swamp was not an investment contract because the evidence did not show that the promoter or any other obligated person or entity was promising the buyers to build or provide anything after the sale of the land. Deluz Ranchos Investment Ltd. versus Coldwell Banker and Co., the Ninth Circuit found no investment contract where land sale contracts obligated the defendant to do no more than transfer title, and there was, quote, no reference in the contracts to an obligation on the part of defendant to develop any land, unquote. And so these are cases from 1979, 1993, cases that have been around for quite a while and are not related to digital assets at all. In its complaint and in this action, the SEC does not allege a contractual undertaking to deliver future value. Let's repeat that one. In its complaint in this action, the SEC does not allege a contractual undertaking to deliver future value. It does not even allege that purchasers of tokens on Coinbase or through Prime reasonably understood they were buying a bundle of rights that included a contractual right to future value. That is fatal to the SEC's Exchange Act claims. I've really enjoyed it so far. Now we'll get into one of the subpoints. The SEC misreads Howey in asserting that a scheme without a contractual undertaking will suffice. Having failed to plead a contractual undertaking, the SEC now argues that a contract is not required, that all the SEC need allege to assert its authority is a nebulous scheme. And they cite the Binance case, where the SEC argues that Howey says that an investment contract can cover schemes or contracts. This position is contrary to decades of the SEC's own prior briefing and analysis, and it is wrong as a matter of law. The SEC misconstrues Howey as excising the word contract from the statute. In the basic investment contract, an investor paid a seller to invest in a business, and the seller agreed to deliver a proportionate share of the business's income or profits at a later date. See Howey. Basic investment contract grants shares in the enterprise, evidenced by formal certificates. See also Gopher Tire regarding booster certificates. Scheme, as the Howey Court used the term, captured variations of the basic investment contract that involved a series of contractual undertakings. This became necessary because some promoters cloak the economics of their offerings in more complex arrangements that had investors paying money for tangible assets of a business and separately receiving a right to cash flows from the labor upon those assets. So an investor would receive, say, a share of land in an orange grove and stapled to that a separate undertaking to cultivate the grove and sell the oranges and deliver a pro rata share of profits from the orange business. Through this artifice, promoters sought to sell assets accompanied by promises of participation in future earnings in the promoter's enterprise in a wide variety of colorful business settings while evading blue sky obligations. These schemes did not fool the courts, which examined the linked contracts together. To meet the countless and variable schemes devised by those who would seek the use of the money of others on the promise of profits, judges called the bluff on contractual arrangements where the asset purchase was just a proxy for the investment of money in return for the promise of cash flows from the business. Courts thus recognized an investment contract when an overall contractual scheme, though it might differ from other contracts more readily identifiable as securities, evidenced a right to participate in the proceeds of a venture, and that cites the Ogden case. Following these blue sky precedents, Howey held that a purchaser's share in the enterprise need not be evidenced by formal certificates, but could also be evidenced by, quote, nominal interests in the physical assets employed in the enterprise, unquote. That's a really interesting statement, that following all this blue sky precedent, Howey held that a purchaser's shares in the enterprise need not be evidenced by formal certificates, that makes sense, but could also be evidenced by, quote, nominal interests in the physical assets employed in the enterprise, unquote. This is the backdrop against which the Howey Court defined an investment contract to mean, quote, a contract, transaction, or scheme whereby a person invests his money in a common enterprise and is led to expect profits solely from the efforts of the promoter or third party. Scheme captured the more complex contractual arrangements, and indeed the facts in Howey, which involved not one but a series of related contractual undertakings. The court held that the economic reality of the whole contractual scheme must be evaluated. When promoters unpack a security into disparate arrangements or agreements, courts would not hesitate to reassemble them for purposes of the investment contract analysis. But that doesn't mean any extra contractual utterance or plan is a scheme, or that the SEC should be permitted to cram that definition into the mouth of the Howey Court, and through Howey into the securities laws, and thereby read the word contract out of investment contract. To the contrary, that result would do violence to the statutory language and the case law that framed and then interpreted it. Indeed, before the SEC's enforcement blitz against the crypto industry, no court had ever adopted the atextual position that a bare investment accompanied by a hope of value increase but no contractual undertaking could qualify as an investment contract. When pressed on this point, the SEC has come up empty on precedent, and they cite the Ripple Labs case. Recent crypto cases do not support the SEC's efforts to use scheme as an escape hatch from statutory text. To support its departure from statutory text and precedent, the SEC may invoke two recent decisions in the cryptosphere, the Kik Interactive case and the Terraform Labs case. Neither of these cases, involving actions taken against token issuers rather than secondary market exchanges, can bear the weight of the SEC's extreme position. In Kik, Judge Hellerstein accepted the SEC's contention that an ongoing contractual obligation is not a necessary requirement for the finding of a common enterprise. This conclusion ignored the decades of precedent discussed above, and the two cases the court cited for this proposition do not support it. both involved contractual schemes with ongoing obligations to the purchaser, and both held that the transactions at issue nevertheless did not involve investment contracts. That's really interesting, right? So they're saying in the Kick case, the conclusion that an ongoing contractual obligation is not a necessary requirement for the finding of a common enterprise ignored decades of precedent. And the cases that the court cited for this did not support it. Both cases involved contractual schemes with ongoing obligations to the purchaser, and both held that the transactions at issue nevertheless did not involve investment contracts. And so they cite the Hart versus Pulte Homes of Michigan Corporation case from 1984, where a contractual arrangement entitling purchasers to ongoing lease payments, insurance, maintenance, utilities, and real estate taxes, as well as the Davis v. Rio Ranchero Estates Inc. case from 1975 involving a purchase agreement providing that title will be conveyed to the purchaser when the purchase price and interests are paid in full. Terraform, for its part, rejected an argument that an investment contract requires, quote, a formal common law contract between transacting parties, unquote, and concluded that no enforceable written contract is required to establish the existence of an investment contract. Wherever the contracting parties agree, that is, scheme that the contractee will make an investment of money in the contractor's profit-seeking endeavor, the court reasoned, there is an investment contract. This conception of scheme sweeps far more broadly than the statute or the cases permit. And they cite Black's Law Dictionary, where a scheme is a document containing provisions for regulating the management or distribution of property rights, or for making an arrangement between two persons having conflicting rights. But it is nevertheless consistent with Coinbase's position and does not save the SEC's claim. Nowhere in its complaint does the SEC allege, in the words of the Terraform decision, that the contracting parties on Coinbase's exchange, so the parties on either side of the blind bid-ask token trades, agreed or schemed that the buyer's payment would be invested in the seller's profit-seeking endeavor. Nor could it. And they cite the Ripple case here, where no investment contract where buyers, quote, could not have known if their payment of money went to an issuer or to any other seller of the subject token. Now their third subpoint here. So remember, we've done the first subpoint, which was the SEC misreads Howey in asserting that a scheme without a contractual undertaking will suffice. So they unpack the difference between a scheme and a contract by looking at the jurisprudence. The second point is that recent crypto cases, so looking at Kick and Terraform, and the SEC's efforts to expand the definition of scheme and use it as an escape hatch from statutory text. And now the third argument is that the SEC's effort to portray a simple asset sale as a security is an unprecedented stretch. Throughout the complaint, the SEC tries to mask the deficiencies of its allegations, and specifically its inability to identify any transaction over Coinbase that includes a contractual undertaking to deliver future value. With the ipse dixit that crypto asset securities trade on the Coinbase platform, that is a sleight of hand. Wow, what a great opening. So let's reread that one. Throughout the complaint, the SEC tries to mask the deficiencies of its allegations, and specifically its inability to identify any transaction over Coinbase that includes a contractual undertaking to deliver value, with the ipse dixit that crypto asset securities trade on the Coinbase platform. That is sleight of hand. Unlike a stock or bond or certificate of interest sold on a secondary market, the object of sale here, a digital asset, is it not itself a security? And it can be a component of a security, an investment contract, only if accompanied by relevant contractual undertakings. And they cite the Ripple case, noting that in precedent investment contract cases involving asset sales, the subject of the investment contract was a standalone commodity, which was not itself inherently an investment contract. The orange groves weren't investment contracts in Howey, where it was written that investment contracts were not fee simple interests in land, but rather packages that included land sales contracts, warranty deeds, and service contracts. It was the cultivator's promise to share in the profits generated by his cultivation of the parcels that transformed the transaction from a mere sale of property into a contract that promised a future return based on an initial investment. The payphones weren't securities in SEC versus Edwards, the 2004 case, where payphones were offered packaged with a site lease, a five-year leaseback and management agreement, and a buyback agreement. And then the Ripple case, where a digital token is not in and of itself a contract, transaction, or scheme that embodies the Howey requirements of an investment contract. The SEC's failure to plead a relevant contractual arrangement surrounding the tokens at issue here is even more conspicuous than in earlier eras of over-aggressive enforcement. In the 1980s, for example, the SEC sued sellers of gold coins, claiming that their promise to deliver coins at a future time was an investment contract. The Ninth Circuit disagreed because although the sellers undertook to mine the gold needed to fulfill the contracts, the resulting value to be delivered, the coins, would not be a product principally of the seller's managerial efforts, but rather of the market value of gold at the time of delivery. The court worried that the SEC's contrary logic could be applied to, quote, any sale of goods contract in which the buyer pays in advance of delivery and the ability of the seller to perform is dependent in part on both his managerial skills and some good fortune. That's a really interesting point, just to give some context in the Canadian side, where we have this whole concept of a crypto contract, which our securities regulators have created based on the fact that there is not immediate delivery of the crypto assets on these registered crypto asset trading platforms. And because of that, they say that there are these managerial efforts that hold the value. But you can see even the Ninth Circuit in this case saying the logic could be applied to any sale of goods contract in which the buyer pays in advance of delivery and the ability of the seller to perform is dependent on the seller's managerial skill and some good fortune. When I buy something on Amazon, I don't get immediate delivery of that product, but I'm dependent on Amazon to deliver it. There's a very strong argument that what they've done with the whole concept of crypto contract in Canada is analogous to this. So now back to the motion. Here, the SEC pursues a far more exorbitant theory with even less grounding in text or historical context. Unlike in Belmont Reed, and even in other digital asset cases the SEC has pursued, the purchaser on Coinbase's exchange has no contractual right to anything except ownership of the purchased token. In SEC versus Telegram, there was at least a contract for future issuance of digital tokens, pursuant to which, if the issuer did not deliver grams to the initial purchaser by October 31st, 2019, the gram purchase agreements would have obligated Telegram to refund any remaining funds from the 2018 sales. And in Kick, there was an integrated offering pursuant to which tokens were sold for future delivery. In Ripple, the institutional sales that the court found qualified as investment contracts were made pursuant to written contracts for future delivery. In this case, by contrast, the SEC has charged Coinbase based solely on blind bid-ask spot exchange transactions, the very sort of transactions the Ripple court recently held as a matter of law were not investment contracts because the undisputed facts showed no relevant relationship between the parties to the sale. On Coinbase's secondary market exchange and through Prime, there is no investment of money coupled with a promise of future delivery of anything. There is an asset sale. That's it. It is akin to the sale of a parcel of land, the value of which may fluctuate after the sale, or a condo in a new development, or an American Girl doll, or a Beanie Baby, or a baseball card. Notably, SEC officials have admitted that two tokens traded on Coinbase, Bitcoin and Ether, are commodities rather than securities. And to make that point, they pull a statement of Gary Gensler stating that Bitcoin and Ether have been designated by the SEC as not securities, as well as Bill Hinman's when Howey met Gary Plastic speech in June 2018. When a purchaser buys Bitcoin on Coinbase, she has no fewer and no more contractual rights than a purchaser of Dash or ADA or any of the other tokens called out in the complaint. She is entitled to delivery of her tokens, nothing more. No principled basis exists to distinguish transactions in the tokens the SEC has already conceded to be commodities and transactions in the tokens the SEC now claims to be securities. The secondary market sales of all these tokens are all asset sales, carry no post-sale contractual obligations. The Ripple Court found no investment contract based on facts substantially identical to those alleged here. To accept otherwise would be to allow the SEC to do precisely what the Ninth Circuit said it couldn't 30 years ago, turn any sale of goods contract into a security. Such a strong argument, and that is the crux of the argument regarding the SEC's allegations around the tokens being investment contracts and the stretching of the term scheme. And what a good example of how great lawyering is done by diving deep and understanding all the facts, not only from the case, but the precedent, and doing your research to pull from the SEC's briefs and how I thought it was a good example of a well-written brief and one that was articulated very persuasively. In Part B, they talk about why the SEC's Exchange Act claims fail for the additional and independent reason that any future value that token purchasers on Coinbase and through Prime may hope to reap is not in the profit, income, or assets of the issuer's business. That feature is missing entirely. A good example explaining how transactions on Coinbase and through Prime are not investment contracts because the purchaser gets no share in business income, profits, or assets. And that's a few pages long, and it's a very strong argument as well. The third major point that they argue is that the major questions doctrine compels rejection of the SEC's construction of investment contract. And so they say, even if the Securities and Exchange Commission presented a colorable claim that the transactions here are investment contracts, the major questions doctrine would require dismissal of the complaint in deference to Congress's prerogative to decide how to regulate, quote, a significant portion of the American economy, unquote. The doctrine holds that an extraordinary grant of regulatory authority requires clear congressional authorization, and courts presume that Congress intends to make major policy decisions itself, not leave those decisions to agencies. When the government claims to discover in a long extant statute an unheralded power to regulate a significant portion of the American economy, courts cannot accept an agency's novel statutory construction, even if colorable or plausible. The doctrine applies with special force when the agency claims authority it has previously acknowledged it lacks. The major questions principle applies directly here. The wholesale regulation of secondary markets for trading digital assets qualifies as, quote, extraordinary, unquote, and the digital asset industry, worth around $1 trillion, is a significant portion of the American economy. And they cite the West Virginia case as well as a Nebraska case that observed that economic impact of approximately $50 billion sufficed to render doctrine applicable in Alabama Association of Realtors versus the Department of Health and Human Sciences. One in five adults in the United States has owned a cryptocurrency. Hundreds of millions of people globally use cryptocurrencies that are traded on platforms in the United States for myriad purposes. And far from the required clear congressional authorization, the SEC's authority is clear as mud. Its construction of investment contract is divorced from the statutory term's plain meaning, contrary to the historical context that the Supreme Court and the Commission itself long ago agreed must inform the term's meaning, and predicated on a linguistic trick, a novel expansion of the word scheme as it appears in a very different context in a 77-year-old judicial decision. It is also contrary to the position the SEC chair took only 2 years ago when he conceded in congressional testimony that, quote, trading in crypto assets does not have a regulatory framework, unquote, at the SEC. and that only Congress could confer such plenary regulatory authority over crypto exchanges. One commissioner has expressly recognized that if, quote, we seriously grapple with the legal analysis and our statutory authority, we would have to admit that we likely need more clearly delineated statutory authority to regulate certain crypto tokens and to require crypto trading platforms to register with us, meaning the SEC. And Congress might decide to give that authority to someone else, unquote. And as you might have guessed, that was a quote from Commissioner Hester M. Pierce's remarks before the Digital Assets at Duke conference from January 2023. To an unprecedented degree, even as compared to other cases where courts have deferred to the legislature under the major questions doctrine, Congress is actively considering the very question the agency has now taken upon itself to answer. Congress has, in recent years, considered more than 20 legislative proposals concerning regulation of digital assets, some apportioning regulatory oversight across multiple agencies, others vesting jurisdiction with the CFTC or stating the SEC lacks regulatory authority. But rather than let Congress decide, the SEC has mounted a campaign of regulation by enforcement, culminating in this action, filed hours before the House was scheduled to hear testimony concerning a proposed bill that would divide regulatory authority over crypto assets between the SEC and CFTC. None of the many bills introduced in this area over the past several years, which include bipartisan legislation proposed last month by Senators Gillibrand and Loomis, and legislation advanced just last week from two House committees on a bipartisan vote, and they cite all the different bills, the Financial Innovation and Technology for the 21st Century Act, Clarity for Payment Stablecoins Act, and others, would vest the SEC with sole regulatory authority. Yet here the SEC is, claiming that authority for itself on the strength of shaky and inadequate legal theory, all while steadfastly refusing to explain to the public what contours or limits it puts on that authority. That is impermissible under the major questions doctrine. The SEC suggests that it escapes the major questions doctrine because it jumps straight to enforcement without first submitting its statutory interpretation to the test of notice and comment rulemaking. This, the SEC says, is merely enforcing statutory requirements, not regulatory action. The argument defeats itself. The notion that an agency deserves greater deference for assuming powers peremptorily while refusing to follow the regulatory process does even further violence to the separation of powers. Nor, finally, does the recent Terraform ruling justify the SEC's major questions overreach. In concluding that the SEC's claims of authority were insufficiently extraordinary and the crypto industry was insufficiently important to warrant the doctrine's application, Terraform overlooked entirely the Supreme Court's recent clarification and application of the doctrine in the Nebraska and Alabama Association of Realtors cases. Viewed in light of those cases, there is no question that the SEC's claim of authority to regulate exchanges at the core of the $1 trillion digital asset industry carry a sufficient exceptional potential economic impact, or that its novel statutory construction is sufficiently extraordinary to implicate the doctrine. Ordinary principles of statutory construction and application of precedent dictate that investment contract does not stretch to cover the facts pleaded here, so the court need not reach the major questions doctrine. But if the court were to find the SEC's construction colorable at all, the doctrine would have to be considered. Its application here, where an agency has arrogated to itself authority to police a vast swath of the economy, would mandate dismissal. And then the final two arguments that are made in this motion is, one, that Coinbase is entitled to judgment on the claim that it acts as an unregistered broker through a wallet. And I highly recommend you read the full motion. I'll put a link in the show notes below to see the argument there. The final argument being that Coinbase is entitled to judgment on the claim that its staking services constitute unregistered securities. And there's sub-arguments there that, one, Coinbase's staking services do not involve an investment of money, because they do not involve relinquishment of property, creating a risk of loss. And the second sort of sub-argument that they make there are that profits from Coinbase's staking services are not by dint of managerial services, because no aspect of the Coinbase staking service in any event reflects profits generated by the essential managerial efforts of others. As staking rewards are not properly conceived as investment profit, but rather reflect payments for putting staked assets to work to perform validation services in support of the relevant blockchain. And their sort of final conclusion is that Coinbase has long supported and proactively sought additional regulation for the digital asset industry. Nothing in its defense of the SEC's charges marks a deviation from that position. Coinbase welcomes new regulatory rules of the road and believes they would benefit Coinbase and the industry. But regulation must be fair and transparent and lawful. The SEC's attack on Coinbase is none of that. This action reflects an abrupt, unexplained change of agency position, unmoored from the statutory authority Congress has given the SEC. It proceeds in the form of a punitive, ad hoc enforcement action, notwithstanding Coinbase's repeated pleas for forward-looking notice and comment rulemaking. Most fundamentally, it does not comply with the securities laws. The SEC has overstepped its authority, and the case should be accordingly dismissed. For the foregoing reasons, Coinbase is entitled to judgment on the pleadings. This was submitted on August 4th, 2023, by Coinbase's external counsel, the attorneys for Coinbase, Wattel Lipton, Rosen and Katz, and Sullivan and Cromwell. And what's neat is Kevin Schwartz, who's been on Law of Code podcast in episode, I believe it's 104, I'll link that in the show notes below, was part of the team at Wattel. I hope you found that helpful. Thank you for joining me. Once again, this has been another episode of the Law of Code podcast. I am your host, Jacob Robinson. If you did enjoy this, please let me know on Twitter, @JacobRobinsonJD. Thank you.